Finance and Revenue is open. Good afternoon. We're going to go out of order here and open up a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 212. We are looking at the Dash One Amendment. It has nothing to do with the language that's in there, and this has to do with disconnecting from gambling subsidies and adding back a tuition deduction. Kyle, can you walk us through the details of the Dash One?
Sure. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. And we actually have a Dash Two at this time, which was building off the Dash One as well. But
I just saw one in all this. Okay, there's a two.
Yeah.
Okay.
Senate Bill 212, the amendment is a gut-and-stuff amendment. So what's in the Dash 2 is essentially two component pieces. The first is one this committee has discussed in other legislation, is the disallowing of the deduction that's related to gambling losses. So this has already been, I want to say it was SB 197 or 194, but again, so that one's been discussed in front of this committee as well. So that would be disallowing a deduction. So in that case, it would essentially yield a positive revenue benefit from disallowing the deduction. And then the second component piece is allowing a subtraction here in Oregon for tuition and fees. And this is building off of a deduction or a above-the-line deduction. So a deduction that's available to all income tax filers, regardless of whether they itemize. But this is a federal deduction that has a sunset at the federal level. It's one that's often referred to as a tax extender because in many cases it was extended at the federal level 1 year at a time. So this is a federal provision that exists in Oregon through our definition of taxable income. So through our connection there, this deduction for tuition fees exists in Oregon when it's in effect at the federal level. Now, it has sunset at the federal level at this time. There has been some discussion at the federal level of possibly extending it, but at this time it has not been, and it is getting pretty late for the feds to extend the sunset at this time. So right now under current law, the tuition and fees deduction at the federal level has gone away, so it doesn't exist automatically here in Oregon. So the change in SB 212 of the Dash 2 would be to allow that tuition fee as a subtraction here in Oregon to the extent of 23% of that federal amount that would be allowed. And the reason for that 23% is that balances the revenue impact. So we have, by limiting the gambling loss deduction, you can see up in the revenue impact statement, that's a positive in the revenues of about 5.7, 5.8 million in the first couple fiscal years. And then that'd be offset then by allowing the partial or the 23% Oregon subtraction, the tuition fees, yields a revenue loss of about $6.2 million for those first two fiscal years. And one thing to keep in mind is if that if the federal level, if they extend the tuition fee deduction at the federal level, Oregon would pick that up through our connection to definition of taxable income. So in that case, this specific Oregon-only subtraction essentially becomes, has to get added back, or you wouldn't be able to double dip is the idea. If someone's claiming tuition and fees at the federal level and it filters through to Oregon through our definition of taxable income, you wouldn't take an additional tuition and fee subtraction here in Oregon. It would just, it would be zeroed out here in Oregon and you just take it through the federal connection.
Technical question?
Technical question, Senator Buckley.
So presently, the federal subtraction is still valid but expires at the end of the year? Is that what you're saying?
Senator Buckley, it has expired at this time. Tax year 2017 was the last year in which it could be taken, and it was extended last time at the federal level in calendar year 2018 for 2017. So there is some history of where the feds actually retroactively extended it, and they only extended it for 1 year. So they extended it, and it was already sunset again, essentially.
When did they do that last time?
It was in, Senator, last time it was February. So it was following the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. They extended that. Usually it's done in December.
I see in some of our testimony here, I don't know if this is your material, but college students or their parents, 27,000 returns in 2016. The average Oregon tax savings was about $123.
Yes, Senator, so that is a subset of the tax expenditure report. So that's the federal connection piece right there in the last published tax expenditure report book. So it does give, again, the structure and everything is just using the same language that's in the IRC, the federal level, and just allowing that subtraction per those parameters here in Oregon. So in some ways, it's allowing that deduction at the federal level that went away to exist again here in Oregon at the 23% level of what it otherwise would be.
Other questions of Kyle Easton?
Yes, Mr. Chair, with you. So have we had a hearing on this particular deduction on what you're now, I don't recall this hearing.
No, Senator Betts, not on the tuition and fees. That's a new component piece. It was just the disallowing of the gambling loss has been discussed by the committee, but the tuition and fee is a new component piece.
Mr. Chair, I'm happy to hear that because I didn't remember a bit about this in the sense of having held a hearing. Perhaps you can tell us again, because I think the chair just asked you the number of people who are going to benefit from this in Oregon.
Yes, Senator Benz, the number, actually, I can pull those numbers. I don't have them in front of me. What's listed in the tax expenditure report was actually just one of the ways in which you could get the federal adjustment. There's some complexities with the federal deduction in that there's also a credit that overlaps it. And if you take the credit, you're not allowed the deduction. But then in Oregon, we allow you to take the deduction regardless of the federal credit. So it gets counted in two different ways. So that $27,000 is just one of the two. So I can pull that number for you, though. We do have published numbers on it.
And Mr. Chair, can I keep asking questions, or should I?
Absolutely.
So when you say that $27,000, you mean 27,000 returns?
Correct, yes, Senator.
And the benefit per return was how much?
In that case, it's $123.
Okay. Yeah. And that, and this arrangement, for purposes of figuring out how we're going to pay for it, would cost $6.2 million. Is that where the $6.2 million came from?
Yes. Yeah, Senator Benz, yeah. So that's the negative 6.2 is reflective of allowing it at the 23% level rather than the full federal deduction, just a portion of that. And that's more or less in line, again, with offsetting that gambling loss deduction. So it makes it right about revenue neutral.
And it seems as if someone wanted to utilize the $123, is that the benefit? That must be the benefit arising from the deduction. That's the tax, that's the underlying tax benefit that inures from whatever they deduct.
Yes, Senator, yeah. So the way the deduction is structured at the federal level, which gets brought into Oregon, is limited. There's a maximum deduction. It's $4,000 per taxpayer if their income is not more than $65,000 on a single return or $130,000 on a joint. For those with income $65,000 to $80,000 or $130,000 to $160,000, it becomes a $2,000 deduction or a subtraction in that case. So that's, yeah, it's the $2,000 subtraction, and then that gets applied against your marginal tax rate, which gets you to that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it gets you to the, you'd have to have something in excess of at whatever your tax rate is that comes up to 100. Yeah, I'm going to take a wild guess and say $1,200 to get to the $123. That would generate the at a 9.9% tax rate. Pretty rough way of getting at it, but I think that's what you're doing.
Yes, Senator Benz, and I'm pulling the numbers here. So for the total of kind of the two ways in which you can claim it right now, claiming the federal one here in Oregon, would put the total number of returns at about $125,000 per year that we've seen. And that's been pretty fairly consistent. There's some movement there up to $130,000 as such. But over the last 5 years or so, you're about that $125,000 or so returns.
Okay, so I turn my attention to the combination of these two activities in the same, in this case, -2 amendment. That's what we're doing. Is that right?
Yes.
So, and why would we do such a thing? Why wouldn't we bring these separately? Is there some reason that we'd combine these in this? I know what the answer is, but please, for the record, why are we combining the two?
Senator Benz, I believe they're being combined because they more or less equal a revenue neutral position. That's my understanding.
And okay, and so you'll have to refresh my memory. He says, I've been off this committee for a whole year, so I've forgotten why we would want to do that. What benefit inures to us by virtue of making this revenue neutral, if it's a benefit? Is it a procedural matter?
Yes, Senator Benz, well, there's certainly ongoing litigation potentially related to this in some case. Now, reducing the deduction for gambling losses is one of those cases where it does yield a positive impact on revenue, but it, under the current interpretation, it doesn't make it a bill to raise revenue because it's just adjusting a deduction. So it's lessening a deduction or making it go away in that case. So in terms of procedurally, the way the current interpretation is right now of how this bill would work, you don't necessarily need the two component pieces together, if that's the thinking, because it is a Senate bill for making sure at the origination and those type of things. Again, would be happy to get legislative counsel down here to go into further discussion.
You mean to define don't necessarily, as you just used it. You don't necessarily have to put these together, but LC could come in and talk to us about how necessarily this is. I understand that it is under litigation, and many arguments can be made around the edges of this device. But my memory has been refreshed thanks to your excellent explanation. And so, do you have some numbers for us? In other words, how far apart is the gambling loss deduction that we're doing away with to the new deduction that we're? I don't know if it's new or not. Did we used to have it?
Yes, Senator Benz. So in the revenue impact statement, I've broken down the two component pieces. The tuition and fees deduction, it's a federal deduction. So it only exists in Oregon when it exists at the federal level. So because of our connection to the taxable income definition, we either have it if it's at the federal level, or we don't have it if they don't have it. So that's kind of where it's like, yes, it has existed in Oregon, but only so long as it does exist at the federal. In terms of the two pieces, the tuition and fees deduction, as you can see up on the screen, the 1921 biennium was, by allowing this deduction here in Oregon, would reduce revenues by $12.4 billion is the estimate. And the gambling loss deduction, by disallowing that deduction, would increase revenues by 11.5. So that's about close to $1 million in the net negative. For 1921, and then as we go out to 21, 23, and 23, 25, because of those numbers that I spoke to earlier where the max deduction is 4,000 or 2,000, and you have those income limits, those are not indexed. The income limits are not indexed to inflation. So there is some expectation that it was over time, the tuition and fee deduction does tend to decrease slightly year over year is the trend. Of course, that can change based upon demographics and how many people are attending school and those type of things. But that's why you see a slight decline with the tuition fees, and then the gambling loss deduction is, we have growth in there in line with what we've seen in recent return data.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, just a
technical question.
Kyle, I just want to make sure I understand. And I'm talking about the federal connection. So I understand the purpose of the amendment. How it says, so what we're really doing is it appears is because it's expired under the present tax code. We're going back and reconnecting with the old tax code and then saying if that doesn't apply, then we're going to do XYZ in our own Oregon deal. So we're actually going back and reconnecting at an older date.
Any question to Kyle?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, Senator Boquist, and that is the connection in this case is a specific point in time date,
okay,
so it fixes
it
back, yeah.
I was just sharing. Thank you very much. Good answer, thanks.
Okay, we have some people signed up for the dash twos. I do not have the sign up sheet here. Bring the team up. David McDonald.
And for the record, my name is Dave McDonald. I'm Associate Vice President at Western Oregon University. Chair Haas, members of the committee, I'll make my comments real brief because this is always nice to be able to speak in support of legislation. So clearly, the public universities do support the Dash 2 amendments. They help us address some of the major affordability crises that we are facing, and we are fully supportive and really appreciate the inclusion in this bill, and thank you very much. Short and sweet.
Sir. Chair Haas, Vice Chair Vance, committee members, my name is Jim Bauer, and I'm the president of the Oregon Alliance of Independent Colleges and Universities. And in my role, I represent the interests of 17 colleges and universities in Oregon that are private, independent, and we educate 34,000 students in Oregon. We're very pleased to be able to be here today to support this bill and the amendments. One of the efforts that we're making as independent colleges is to try and find ways to bring underrepresented students into our campuses. And as you know, the federal deduction for higher education tuition and fees has not been extended. And this deduction, this legislation, these amendments would be very helpful to our constituents as we're bringing underrepresented students in. These are families of very low income. We're doing a lot to help them through their income, but we know that this deduction would make a big difference. In prior years, taxpayers making less than $65,000 were able to deduct this up to $4,000. They now cannot do that, and we see this ability to do this as very valuable in a chain of things that we can do to support these families as they bring underrepresented families into private education. I just want to give you a couple of pieces of information about how we look at this. The state of Oregon and its institutions are committed to doing this, but at the Alliance, 21% of our students are first generation, 28% of our students receive federal Pell Grants, 85% of our students receive institutional aid from the universities, and 28% of our students graduate with no debt at all. And what we do is we work very hard to find ways to bring people through this with manageable debt, and this is just one more way to help their families. So thank you for your efforts to do this. Thank you for bringing the bill forward. Happy to answer any questions.
Senator Boquist.
Thank you, gentlemen. Obviously, you've both been in higher education for a long time, and as you spoke eloquently about the federal program, how long has the federal program been in existence? And is it normally, it sounds like, according to staff, it's sort of been reintroduced every year, probably since all of us have ever gone to college.
Yes.
Is it something happens year to year generally, or what have the feds normally been doing?
I think it's been fairly static. I mean, it's something that people have come to count on, if that's your question.
No follow-up. And my question is since you guys track it, obviously, yes. Here, was federal deductions expiring? They retroactively go back last year. Many of these things, as you know, they go back at the end. They think about it just before they leave for probably September break, right?
Right.
And
correct.
Then they pass it and they keep going back. And I'm just wondering, in your experience, how many times has the federal government, how long has this existed in the federal government? Do they consistently go back when they get around to it?
Senator Boquist, Senator Haas, members of the committee. The legislation that created this is about 20 years old. It's been called the Lifelong Learning or HOPE Scholarships. The initial legislation had more than a one-year duration to it. It actually had a longer period of time. The annual re-upping of this has been a more recent phenomena, representative of a lot of things that are happening in Washington, D.C., or not happening in Washington, D.C. the last 5 to 10 years. So it's, Senator Boquist, this annual process is more recent.
Great, thanks. I got something to go look up now. Thanks, appreciate it. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I was just running the numbers without the benefit of the various restrictions on the use of this particular deduction. And so qualified tuition in your institution is what? A year.
Absolutely, Senator Haas, Senator Vance. For Western Oregon University, our annual tuition for the current year is approximately $8,000. Fees make it up to about $10,000. These fees are oftentimes student-generated fees that they vote and tax on themselves. And this deduction applies to both the tuition and the mandatory fees. So about $10,000 would be your roundabout number.
And, Mr. Chair, follow-up, if I may.
Follow-up.
We enjoy a subtraction from federal taxable income in an amount equal to 0.23 multiplied by the deduction as computed under that for qualified tuition. I don't know if all of that tuition qualifies for the deduction, Kyle, does it? I'm just trying to get to what, I'm just trying to get the same number you gave us earlier, which, when I ran the number here a second ago, it doesn't matter. It looks like you're here to thank us for a pretty modest benefit per student. Have I said that right?
That's correct.
You probably would ask us to do a little more. You would be justified in doing so, by the way.
Yes, you would, absolutely. So yes, if you could do more, we would appreciate
yes,
that.
Right, that's why we're here. Okay, I just want to make sure, yes.
To that point, one of my documents I have here is taxpayers earning $65,000 single, $130,000 joint, may receive a subtraction of almost $1,000, $920 off their Oregon taxable income. And the break between $80 and $160 is $500 off their Oregon taxable income. And to a college student, $500 is a lifeline.
Absolutely.
As a college parent, it's not that either.
It's equally important. As a college parent, I guarantee you $500 makes a difference for our household.
Yeah. If you gave them a $500 scholarship, they would know it's real money.
would. Any further questions? Thank you, gentlemen, both for coming
Thank
up.
You.
I don't believe we have anybody else signed up to testify on this. Senator Benz, I'd like your comment on this amendment.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm supportive of the tuition part, not so much of the gambling part. I wish the two weren't put together. The reason that I am not supporting of the gambling deduction, what's the right word for it, Kyle? Termination, whatever the right word is because I know how gambling works, and I do not understand why we would create the damage we're going to create to a lot of businesses, tribal and otherwise, by making it impossible for those. That deduction to remain in place. I had a brief conversation with, and probably you did too, with some of the tribal folk when they realized what was happening, and I just don't see how that works. So I can't support it, okay. Because I think it does damage to our to other activities we have going on in the state. And since these are tied together, obviously I can't support the bill or the amendment.
Well, I mean, we're in a public hearing and we get to work session. First, I'll declare a conflict of interest because I am the one in court on the constitutionality. I actually think that Kyle is one of our brightest minds that we have in legislative revenue. In this particular case, we're in total disagreement on the constitutionality piece. I think it is completely open to question. And I just want to point out, Mr. Chair, it sort of looks like with timing information and the discussion we had, as we're putting two pieces together, for political purposes, which I fully understand. And I'm probably more inclined than my colleague to say the high-income people that we all listened about a year ago that were getting this gambling deduction, that is very problematic and troubling and had to do with that. But I'm also just as deal as, unfortunately, my working poor go to the casinos and then try to pay for their tuition. So I'm going to take it on one hand and hand it to the other, and I'm not sure what exactly. But I think fundamentally, I'm in constitutional disagreement, so.
Okay, thank you. Senator Taylor?
Thank you, Chair Hess. I wanted to ask Kyle, when we talked about the gambling measure before, I believe that there was some information provided to the committee about the number of people who were professional gamblers versus recreational gamblers. Is that correct? You happen to have that?
Yes, Senator Taylor, the estimate related to eliminating the deduction for the gambling losses is primarily all coming from those non-professional gamblers. The professional gambler piece is extremely tiny.
Okay, so I wanted to have that on the record. And the second piece that I, if I may, is I also believe from our previous hearing that evidence of that loss is not required by the IRS. I mean, by the Oregon Department of Revenue, is that correct?
Yes, Senator Taylor's, and this is, a provision that's in federal law, so that you
can
correct
the IRS. Sorry, I was getting confused.
But yeah, it's one of those where the requirement is you're required to keep a diary or a journal of these things, but it's not submitted with the return. So it's definitely one of those, if you come under audit, you need to be able to back up those numbers, but it's not automatically submitted on an informational component piece of the tax return.
Okay. Okay. So that leaves us, follow-up?
Follow-up.
So, thank you. So that leaves us, and since we're not the IRS, it's a little unclear exactly how many people are actually perhaps experiencing that loss. I mean, it's not known. It's unknown. We're relying on what is being documented. And we don't know if people are doing the same filing every year and whether or not they're actually having that loss. It's not, I just, you don't have to comment on that, I guess, but it's just unknown, I would say, because of the system that we don't control is set up. But regardless of that, I'm supportive of this measure. I think that it's families do need this support regarding going to school, and we have to set some priorities here. And this is an opportunity to show that we are, you know, that our values are that we support families with students going to school, and this is a way to do that. So I guess I just wanted to get on the record that I'm supportive of the measure. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to comment on the constitutional issue. I don't know if it's constitutional or not. Under our guidance that we have right now, we're told that it is constitutional. But as long as I don't know, I'm going to try to do what I think is the right thing and let the courts work it out. And so I'm going to be supportive of this bill. And I believe it's constitutional, but there is a lawsuit. I'll let them work that out. In the meantime, I'll do what I think is right.
Well, Senator Riley, this is not a revenue raiser. It's a loss total.
Yes, I understand.
The reason these two were picked was pretty simple. And during the interim, when we looked at the disconnect and the arguments for disconnecting or not and moving to an AGI, is because these two federal changes rose to the top of the most egregious. There are probably others. I know there are others. And we could do a long line if we wanted. But these two rose to the top. And these changes, extending the gambling subsidy and cutting the tuition deduction, were not made by anybody in Oregon. They were made by members of Congress and the president. And I don't think those two changes in and of themselves reflect Oregon's values at all. But I think this turns that around to helping college students. I think that is a better reflection of Oregon's values. And this may speak to the larger issue of just how many of these federal tax laws do we want to connect to if they're not made by Oregonians and not in the best interest of Oregonians?
Chair, I have a technical question.
Technical question, Senator Boquist.
Kyle, if we're along the lines of Senator Taylor's questioning of the tax returns, if I recall correctly, we previously, if you took this deduction, I believe, in the federal government, the federal side that's now expired. If I recall correctly, and I'll just look across the room because somebody back there is going to know the answer to this, you used to have, having six college students at various times, okay? So if there's anybody here who wants to know about impoverished college students, I'm ahead of you, Mr. Chair.
That means you're a yes.
Those six college students.
We can make it retroactive for a long time.
We used to submit with our federal tax return a form. We got a form from the university. The university then we submitted it and sent it in. Now with the federal tax code now expiring, and of course that form is based purely on producing a form because it's nationwide in the federal tax code. Now that that's expired, how are we going to, in the same spirit of Senator Taylor, since she raised the issue, how are we going to know what is the correct legal term, Senator Bentz had it here, qualified tuition. How are we going to do that in the state of Oregon? Are we just going to fill it in a form and adjust the form and DOR is going to come back with a new form? Are we going to, or the university is going to continue the old program of sending, which I get every year, and I know because I'm the one who goes through our taxes, and we have this form that says Daria, you know, spent $6,827. How are we going to prove that piece?
to there? I mean, what's the proving piece on the opposite side?
Yeah, Senator Boquist, and I want to preclude Department of Revenue weighing in either, but in this case, because we're leveraging or tying to the IRC, the Internal Revenue Code, we have all the definitions that we'll be using, the federal definitions. So in that way, it seems Department of Revenue could use that information or build off of the form at the federal level and require that here in Oregon for this specific Oregon subtraction to be submitted. So you'd have the documentation and such, and you'd be able to use the same terminology and everything. So that should be helpful in allowing Department of Revenue to set it up, how to administer it. Because as you were saying, since this isn't flowing through from the federal, this would be specific to Oregon, so Oregon doesn't automatically have that documentation that comes with the federal form.
So more, we'd have to audit them just like on the other side, to find a mistake.
I think it would depend upon, Senator, how it's designed, or the forms are designed. If it is, do include this schedule or something along those lines with the return, that could be a requirement. Or in a lot of cases, it might be you're required to fill out a worksheet, and then whatever the final total is from that worksheet gets inserted onto the return, and then the worksheet is maintained in the tax record. So in that case, yeah, that's where it becomes and something you would audit and it'd come up. But it all depends upon how the return's designed and whether it requires submission of the form with the return or maintain that form for your records, and then it has to be more or less shown to the department at the request. But this could be one where Department of Revenue can try to work with other information that's available, perhaps from the universities, to have that to tie against, to look if someone is claiming tuition and fees and there's no record of that showing up.
So follow with that question, complication, is there any reason we couldn't create our own program and say, do instead of 0.23, do 0.5? Double it?
Yeah, Senator Boquist, certainly the 0.23 is just the 0.23 makes it the revenue impact that you see in front of you. Could design its own program specifically, but there is certainly benefit of using the federal program just because you have the case law and the definitions and everything that goes behind it from leveraging the IRC there.
So we could do the our own Oregon thing. There's nothing wrong with that.
Certainly, yes.
I want to point out 11 states already disallow this deduction: Connecticut, Illinois, Indiana, Kansas, Massachusetts, Michigan, North Carolina, Ohio, Rhode Island, West Virginia, and Wisconsin.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Benz?
I haven't checked on those states to see if they enjoy a lottery operation like we have going here. We rely upon it for $1.1 billion a year, and I don't know how much Indian tribe gaming they have going on there. In those states. So it's interesting that they be mentioned, but without that data. They may have the same thing, they may have made the same choice, but people can come back and tell us.
I will.
Look at those.
I know they do in Connecticut.
Senator, I couldn't speak to the other states other than having looked to see do other states how they treat this, but I don't know their specific program or how they might adjust for those type of concerns.
Else?
No, go ahead.
Senator Taylor, would you move the dash twos?
Yes, can I? Is there anything other that I need to know? Not about that. I move the for Senate Bill 212, the dash two for Senate Bill 212, dated February 26, 2019.
Senator Taylor moves the dash twos to Senate Bill 212. Any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Boquist?
No.
Senator Riley?
Aye.
Senator Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Benz?
No.
Chair Haas?
Haas votes aye. The amendment is adopted.
I move the Senate Bill 212 go to the floor, I guess, with due pass recommendation. Yes.
Senator Taylor moves Senate Bill 212 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation to the floor of the Oregon State Senate. Is there any discussion?
I just want to make sure, just in case, since I'm in tax court against the other one, that a conflict of interest is placed on the record, just in case.
Okay. Thank you.
And, Mr. Chair,
Senator Benz?
I want the record to be clear. I do support the tuition deduction. It was, there might have been some hint that I didn't. I do. I don't support it attached to this particular offset. I could call out the reasons again, but there's no need. But I want it clear so that I'm not being blamed for not supporting students. That would be incorrect, since I have, well, actually, 1.5 students still. Mr. Chair.
Yes. I can give you half my half, and you can have two if you want. I'm still paying for one, too. I see the problem.
I just wanted to confirm I failed to say the Senate Bill 212 as amended in my motion. I just wanted to put that on the record. I apologize for that.
We got that. It's as amended. Further discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Boquist?
No.
Senator Riley?
Aye.
Senator Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Benz?
No.
Chair House?
Pass votes aye. Senate Bill 212 goes to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. I'll be the carrier. I will close out that work session and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 189. Where are
we here? Okay, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 189 is a bill that's modifying the definition of the term tax expenditure. So again, this is in some ways building off the discussion that this committee had during the presentation of the tax expenditure report. It's one thing that came up on when Department of Revenue presented the tax expenditure report. One of the questions was, what defines a tax expenditure? How does it end up in the tax expenditure report book? And why is it included, and why are there revenue impact estimates made for it? And that comes back to the definition of tax expenditure that's contained in statute, that was put in statute when the tax expenditure report was required. So Senate Bill 189 is modifying that definition of tax expenditure to exclude provisions of federal law that prohibit taxation by the state or local governments. So this committee certainly heard during that tax expenditure presentation many of the tax expenditures that exist just to align Oregon with federal law. So there might be a provision of federal law that wouldn't allow Oregon to do something, so the tax expenditure exists, or keeping us in line with the parameters of the federal constitution as well. So they're more or less requirements. Oregon doesn't have the policy decision capability to deviate from those tax expenditures. So it's removing those federal law provisions from the definition of tax expenditure. And there's also a requirement of the Department of Revenue and Legislative Revenue Office to study the statutory definition of tax expenditures in conjunction with the operation of automatic sunset provisions of the statute, and with the goal of that leading to recommendations of potential proposed legislation to be presented to the Legislative Assembly no later than April 1, 2021. So there is a presentation in OLS related to tax expenditures. I would just call attention to just really two slides from that for a little background on SB 189. But that picks up on slide number 4, which is the definition of tax expenditure that's contained in statute. And you can see what's highlighted there right now in the definition that's there is any law of the federal government or this state. So that's where the inclusion of, well, why does Oregon report in its tax expenditure report on these federal provisions that are required when Oregon has more or less no choice on whether or not to include them anyway? They can't be part of the tax base. So the question comes up, well, why are they even included as a tax expenditure? The reason is it's contained in statute. And then on slide number 5 is the statutory reference that creates the sunset provisions. So again, there's two provisions here under the statute. The first is related to tax credits, and that was the one that was first enacted, and that put the 6-year sunset on tax credits. And in the case when legislation is passed that doesn't have a specific sunset date specified, for any tax credit, it automatically gets that 6-year sunset. A couple years later, the legislature included that requirement of a 6-year sunset, or a specification of a sunset at least, for all tax expenditures. So that's the implicit sunset that gets mentioned. So if a tax expenditure is created by the legislature and there's no specification of what the sunset date is, it gets that automatic 6-year sunset date. And again, this was part of the conversation the committee had during the tax expenditure report presentation related to in some cases, whether or not there's disagreement, or it's maybe unclear on whether or not something that's being a new tax or something that's modified may create a tax expenditure through one interpretation, while another interpretation may be a tax expenditure was not created. And again, there can be some ambiguity in there, but if it is viewed as a tax expenditure, it gets that six-year sunset. And that's where in some cases, if the legislature, maybe the intent wasn't to have that six-year sunset to exist, but it wasn't really viewed as creating a tax expenditure to begin with. So those are things that kind of get caught up in the discussion, and that's part of what Senate Bill 189 would attempt to address, I suppose, in that report, reporting back to the legislature would discuss ways in which to possibly work within the current definition changes or something on those lines to help make it more apparent how to interpret the definition of tax expenditure and how these sunsets may or may not be implicitly created.
So what we really need to do is to create a new definition and create the sunsets that work in a way that's not being done now. And this bill does the study. And the House Revenue Committee is taking up this issue too. They may even have legislation out on it sometime soon. But any questions for Kyle on the need to do this?
Yes.
Senator Riley?
So let me understand. There are two pieces in this bill. One of them changes the definition, and so a tax expenditure that we can't change now becomes not a tax expenditure. Is that correct?
Yes, Senator Wright, that's the general idea. Those federal provisions that are out of the hands of the Oregon legislature, yeah, those would no longer be contained in that definition of tax expenditures.
Even though they are tax expenditures.
Yes, under the current definition, and that was part of the discussion, is, well, what is a tax expenditure? And these could be ones that are identified as a tax expenditure at the federal level, potentially, but here in Oregon, yeah, do you want those to be included in the definition of a tax expenditure, or are they in maybe their own category or something along those lines? But yes, the bill in that case would segregate, I guess, those federal law provisions.
Would segregate them and leave them in the tax expenditure report, or remove them from the tax expenditure report?
Senator Riley, it would remove the requirement for them to be in the report, yes. So because they would no longer be a tax expenditure, they're not required to be in that report. So yes, in that way, they would be removed from that listing, yeah.
Thank you.
Other questions for Kyle? Senator Benz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Kyle, looking at the staff measure summary, it says requires the Department of Revenue and the Legislative Office to study the statutory definition of tax expenditures in conjunction with the automatic sunset. And then you went through three sunsets. And the one that's of greatest interest to me right now is the 2013 statute. And was the concept there that was going to apply to each and every of the tax expenditures in the tax expenditure book that we get? Are there any that are left out, ignoring federal issues?
Yeah, Senator Bentz. So it's only for going to be new tax expenditures enacted by the legislature. So it wouldn't automatically apply a sunset to all the existing tax expenditures.
So, follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
In looking at your tax expenditure timeline, 2013 expansion of automatic six-year sunset to all tax expenditures. So mortgage interest, does that have a six-year sunset on it now?
No, Senator Benz. It's and the requirement, and that's I'm looking in the statute right now, was only for those that are for tax expenditures that are modified after the effective date of the 2013 statute that you're referring to. So it didn't automatically put sunsets on every single tax expenditure. It's just that requirement going forward that when the legislature enacts a tax expenditure, it needs to have a specification, whether that is 6 years, something longer than that, something shorter than that, or it will get that automatic six-year sunset.
Okay, so I guess my question was, as to that second sentence in the staff measure summary, the study is limited to the newer tax expenditures, as opposed to looking back to the book of tax expenditures, a great portion of which were established way before those dates. I'm just trying to get an idea of the scope of the study.
Yeah, Senator Benson. Just pulling up the actual bill itself here. So yeah, it's conducting a study on the definition of the automatic sunset. So yeah, that, as you were just saying, the study is pretty specific to that implicit sunset and how that works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, and then Mr. Chair, one final question about the one of the slides you just were showing. Going back to the definition itself, there was a second highlighted area, which has always been of great interest to me, and it's that established tax phrase. Can you share with us your thinking on what that means? Exempts in whole and part tax, blah, blah, from, quote, the impact of established taxes. And can you just tell us again the meaning of the word? Why is that highlighted?
Yeah, Senator Benson, and that goes to kind of the heart of the discussion in some cases of what's the base and then what's a deviation from the tax base. And in some cases, and that's part of the ongoing discussion, is there may be reason why in trying to determine the tax base, that statute could be written in a way, in many cases it's a lot easier to say we want to tax everything, all 100 of these things, except for these two things, rather than spell out the 98 things you want to tax or something to that effect, if that makes sense. So it can just be the way in which statutes even constructed could make the base larger, and then you pull out what you don't want to tax. But the intent of the legislature may have been to never include those things in the first place in the base, but for the way that statute's written, it creates the base larger and then pulls them out. And that's part of what leads to, I guess, some of the discussion or some of that ambiguity that's been ongoing in how the legislature has created some of these tax systems, and whether or not that tax expenditure really is a tax expenditure per se or a deviation from the base, or whether it exists solely because it was easier to structure the base or the statute in that way.
Kyle, that is so subjective. Doesn't that open the possibility that a crafty lobbyist or a crafty legislator could get his pet project exempted or excluded, put in that category?
Yeah, Chair Haas, I suppose the legislature always has the ability to include the magic word notwithstanding as well, which can help to, and again, I think that's the idea, is the legislature does have the authority to modify this current definition, or when putting in place, enacting some tax or creating a new tax base, to take those the definition into consideration on how to structure that. Again, I think in some cases that ambiguity is, well, after the fact, other minds may be looking at this and seeing something a little bit differently than perhaps the legislature, how they were viewing it during the creation of the tax base, so to speak, at the time.
Okay, Senator Riley.
So I'm okay with creating a separate section in the tax expenditure book for federal expenditures that we're required to do. But I'm not okay with removing them. I think it creates a false equivalency, and I'm just not okay with removing those expenditures from the tax expenditure book.
I'm with him. I mean, 212, we just disconnected with the code to go our own way, but we connected with the code someplace else for definitions, and we're going to disconnect with the code for definitions right here. We're already confused enough, so and we're supposed to have a simplified tax code according to the Constitution. And follow up on that, maybe, Kyle, you could look at line 18 of the bill. And it says the study may make recommendations for proposed legislation related to tax expenditures. Could you define, since this is a task of LRO, can you help me with that? I mean, what sort of recommendations are we looking for? Policy recommendations, which would be a violation of 26432 for you guys to make, recommendations on how to rebuild the book and put the Fed stuff in the back and the front. What are the make recommendations for proposed legislations? It looks to me like this is one time because it has a sunset on it too. So both my question, Senator Riley's question of what's the book going to look like, and just what sort of recommendations are we going to get out of this study? Are we just going to get a new state version of a tax expenditure report?
Yes, Senator Boquist, I think the study is really focusing on, again, just on the definition and the implied sunset. So it wouldn't be a tax expenditure report or some equivalent or anything along those lines. But in terms of the recommendation, things that would come to mind, and in that this is done with Department of Revenue and the Legislative Revenue Office, would be maybe getting some information from Department of Revenue on how they're viewing things under current law, and then possible ways in which it could help maybe clear things up for them a little bit, or if you change it this way, it makes it more clear for them on how to interpret that definition. Or it could be, to Senator Riley's point, ways in which you could adjust the definition of tax expenditure, and then reporting on it, of course, could be another way as well. That would be more of the tax expenditure report, I suppose, but that would be a way to maybe thread that needle, so to speak, a little bit. If the definition wants to be changed, but the legislature still wants that information that's contained in the tax expenditure report, then the numbers and such.
Peter, follow up. So I think Senator Riley and I are talking about the report, and I'm looking at the deal here, and it says tax expenditures, and you sound like you're talking about how do we do the report and how do we report so on and so forth. Are we talking about the report, or as it says here, are we talking about specific tax expenditures that are inside the report? I'm only slightly confused. I'm with him on the Fed versus state, but I have no idea on the other one, because I don't know if we're talking about going through and addressing each tax expenditure and now make a recommendation for every tax expenditure, as the bill says, and you're trying appear to be conveying that we're going to basically review how we do the report and how we're going to get better information through the good offices of LRO and DOR in the future. And I'm not sure which is which.
Does the Department of Revenue want to weigh in on this? Or you moved up the rows, and that's always a cue. I apologize. I have to move down the hall for a 4 o'clock meeting.
Members of the committee, Mark Garst with the Department of Revenue. I just wanted to say that we definitely appreciate you considering taking a look at this issue. I think that kind of to some of the conversations that happened, we really have two issues here. We have what goes in the book versus what is subject to the six-year sunset. And the Department of Revenue is currently in a position where, working with our attorneys of the Department of Justice, we look at these expenditures to make a determination when their expenditures after 2014, are they new? Were they actually an expenditure, or were they this base being established? And then we will have to make a decision and go ahead and start to no longer give people these exemptions, credits, whatever the expenditure is. So they may not like that. We may be in a situation where there's some litigation. And so we think that any clarity that you can give us on the definition is really helpful. And kind of right to what Senator Bentz was talking about as far as the establishment, that really is a pretty big issue for us. So if the legislature comes in, passes a new tax, we feel like that's the base being established. The legislature comes in a subsequent session, or maybe it's a subsequent legislature, and they start to tinker around with that base. Is that a new base, or is that now an expenditure? And generally, we're taking the position that those are expenditures. You may disagree. And so the result might be that you might have some things where you thought you were just clarifying a statute, where we end up trying to take away somebody's tax break. So we very much appreciate you giving this some consideration. It is a significant issue. I think Kyle's done a great job of kind of laying out some of the disagreement. But if you look through the tax expenditure report, you'll see areas where we identify ones that we're not certain of. We say this may or may not be a tax expenditure that may or may not be subject to the automatic six-year sunset. So, you know, even within our office, there are conversations that are still happening, conversations between us and the Department of Justice, but ultimately there may be disagreements, and it just, you know, clarity is always appreciated.
Senator Taylor.
Thank you, Chair Benz. So in regard to this came up in, it's come up two other times so far this session for me when people are using the term study. So is it that you are looking for a study, or is it really an analysis and identification of things that are not clear, and then wanting to examine what the definitions that have been used in the past and us being more clear about what definition should be used and be consistent, I assume, going forward? Is that really what the objective of this is?
Sure. Chair Benz, Senator Taylor, I think that, so we did not request the bill, and LRO, I think, would have a lot to say about how the study actually got conducted. But I think that maybe what we would be looking to see is, should we divorce the definition of tax expenditures for the purpose of what goes into the tax expenditure report and for the purpose of what is subject to the six-year sunset? We feel like there's a lot of value to reporting a lot of these exemptions, even though they maybe shouldn't be subject to a six-year sunset.
Okay, follow up? Yeah. I agree with that. I definitely agree with that part. Also, I just don't want to put LRO in a position of making some of this seems a little bit of a judgment. So I'm not sure how that will get handled. Are you worried about there being some subjectivity? I'm not sure who I should be asking this to. Or at least at highlighting the things that are, I'm just curious about how that, as long as we're talking about everything out in the open, might as well just say what we have to say. So.
I think our office is pretty adept at giving both, saying, well, you can do this or that, and that's, I would expect, be the way that the report would be presented. Of course, it definitely input from Department of Revenue on how they are having to view things for their own, for the tax expenditure report and for the implicit sunset.
Okay.
But yeah, I think in laying it out, it would more lay out, here are the facts for the legislature, here are the things that have been discussed, the major sticking points, and kind of give a playbook for the legislature to then potentially move forward on if they'd like.
Okay, follow up. I can see that this is, you wrote this and you wrote study and et cetera, but I guess it is really more of an analysis in order to highlight, to identify the areas where there needs to have clarity. And then you're not going to be making those decisions, just putting on the record, you're going to be bringing those issues forward for the committee to review. Is that?
Yes, Senator Taylor, that's correct. And again, with the language that's in the bill, again, it can almost be viewed, it can be a placeholder if the legislature, we can amend the bill to have it adjusted to get the committee or get the legislature back the information that they desire related to this definition and this discussion.
Yeah, I will be advocating for what Senator Riley and I think Senator Bocas was also making this point about, you know, the full everything that people, when there is some sort of benefit being given, that we should know what all of those are. I would like to see.
Senator Boquist.
Mr. Chair, I think what Marker is saying is that conceptually this is a good idea, but we need some clarity. I mean, I'm not sure you're ready to go make up all your new definitions of tax expenditures over there yet. And the way this is written by, and I don't see, because it doesn't have a name, but Kate or somebody wrote this. This bill, you know, needs a little bit of clarity put into it to ensure that our good staff at LRO and our hardworking colleagues across the seat at DOR don't find themselves in trouble based on a little bit of the wording here, who is a little bit too much ambiguity in here. I mean, your explanation, Kyle, and I mean, Chris isn't around here, but you know, proposed legislation versus, I think, the things that Senator Taylor articulated is a better way to put it in the bill. So it does not look like LRO is out proposing legislation, right? When we're really looking out, putting at maybe courses of action or options or those analytical management terms you use, Madam Senator, okay? I'm just thinking it needs a little bit more clarity in here so we don't run afoul, because we, who knows, maybe none of us will be back in 2 years and Kyle will be proposing 26 new bills and overhaul the tax code. And we don't want to put him in that spot. So,
and Chair Benz, kind of to that point, we're in a situation today where there is some ambiguity. And unfortunately, the Department of Revenue is going to have to start making decisions about who gets their expenditure going forward and who does not. So our preference would always be that you folks would make those kind of decisions. We don't like to make those kind of decisions. We just would prefer you guys give us the clarity, and we'll do whatever it is that you want us to do. Continue it, have it sunset, whatever the right answer is for you folks.
So for my purposes, recognizing each one of those terms of art up there, it would be hugely helpful if you would give us the detailed summary of each of those, because there's so much that goes along with just that one phrase. I spent literally 6 or 7 years ago an entire day working on that one phrase, the impact of established taxes. I mean, it's a really interesting phrase, and I've forgotten most of what I learned back then. So if you guys could come in and list the different elements that raises, that would be very helpful to us that aren't as knowledgeable as you guys. And the same would be true for some of the other things that are in the staff measure summary, just because it's such inside baseball. So further questions of this witness? No. And we have Marsha Kelly. Come on up.
I'll make this very quick. Senator Bence, members of the committee, my name is Marsha Kelly, and I'm the public policy advocate for the Oregon Women's Rights Coalition. Thinking back to when I first came in the building full-time, 2001, the tax expenditure report was about 6 years old, and I got to know some of the people who were involved in creating this so that we would understand what we were giving, what we were trying to incentivize by tax credits and tax exclusions and deferrals. From my understanding, John Mullen, Ellen Lowe, who used to be known as the Church Lady, and Jerry Bieberly, who is no longer with us, were part of the crew that got together and got this legislation passed. I'm with Senator Boqvist and Senator Riley. I think that it's important to keep the federal part in there so that you can see some of the interaction that happens between the two. And I sort of consider that by not putting that in, you're sort of like down in ways and means and not putting in the federal funds that are going to come in for the expenditures. Because I think there's a lot of interplay between both the federal tax code and what we do. And if we can know what the federal tax code is doing, and then in addition to that, what we do, it might make it more reasonable to create a situation where we don't have quite so many tax expenditures. The first tax expenditure in the book was done in 1848, because I ran the dates categorically. But in the last few years, we've incrementally added and added and added so that we have more of them. And I think that that's one of the things that we really need to look at is how we incentivize, how long we leave that incentive there, and how it interplays with the federal tax code. I spend a lot of time with the tax expenditure report too. And I do understand that there's some problem with bicycles. That's one of the things that the DOR brought up, the tax on bicycles, and are we exempting the ones that aren't taxed? And so maybe a clarification on that would be helpful, because they weren't wanting to tax kids' bikes is what I understand from legislation.
Right, I recall in that discussion several weeks ago portions of it, so I'm very happy for this study. Further questions of the witness? No? Thank you so much.
I see we're bipartisan here on this one.
Yes.
Well, and I'm sorry,
I didn't mention
Chair Bence. Senator Taylor, I'm sorry, I forgot to mention you. You like the federal tax being in there too, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much. Nothing further on this bill, so I'll close the public hearing on SB 189, and if there's nothing further, we're adjourned.